Welcome back to the Pod of DC. I'm your host, Rick Bernstein. I hope you're having a fine, fine day. Well, we're 3 months into 2024 and March is wrapping up. You know, March is a busy month, from springing our clocks forward an hour to the beginning of spring. Holy observances like Easter and Ramadan are underway, and of course the joys and pains of having your March Madness brackets busted. I experienced those highs and lows, seeing both of my teams, JMU and UNC, make and advance a bit in the tournament, but ultimately get bounced earlier than I had hoped. But March serves also as a temperature check on those New Year's resolutions. Are they sticking or starting to fade? Every year I set a New Year's goal to develop healthier eating habits, and it's not like I don't know the drill, right? Eat the rainbow, minimize processed foods, have plenty of protein, and so on, but I've noticed that my relationship with food as I get older, and am now 13 years into being a parent, has become much more complex than I anticipated, and making sound food choices for myself and my family have become a little bit more complicated. So I was excited to sit down with my next guests, Sarah Quinteros and Julie Schesser, two registered dietitians and moms, and pose some of these complicated questions about diet and nutrition to them. On this episode of the pod, Sarah and Julie break down how to navigate nutrition in a fast-paced world, the ever-changing landscape of diet trends, some creative solutions to engage children to take part in their own food choices and nutrition, understanding what micro and macronutrients are, the cost and accessibility of healthy foods, and their plans to launch a podcast that will engage with experts to help demystify nutrition for individuals and families. Sarah and Julie give some great tips along the way and reminders that at the end of the day, the old adage of everything in moderation is an approach that applies to everyday life and, of course, health and nutrition as well. So without further ado, here's Sarah and Julie. Enjoy.
Food, why does it have to be so complicated? I think that's my first question. I just need something to fuel and to go, and I have to think about all these things.
I wish it didn't have to be so complicated, right? Shouldn't it just be a little easier? But yeah, I think that is a great question. And I think hopefully as dietitians and from the context that we have, we can help kind of streamline that answer of why food has gotten to where it's such a choice to make at every single meal, every single snack. There's so much marketing that I think there's confusion on what is healthy. So yeah, I think getting back to more of the basics though in whole foods, just more of the farm to table approach is usually the easiest and usually the healthiest. Actually achieving that is a huge challenge.
Nutrition is like fashion, right? It's constantly changing. It's constantly right. Something is popular. There's a new diet, like when kale was popular, when quinoa was popular. And it's like, how do we navigate that? And even more so, like when we're taking care of kids, how do you navigate taking, like giving them the right food and making sure they're getting the healthy nutrients to grow and develop?
Yeah, because I just don't feel like they go together, nutrition and convenience. In a fast pace, kind of like you said, kids and you're on the go, whether you're traveling or just like, you know, they need something and they're picky and they're fighting it.
And I think part of that is what we've been taught, that convenience foods now more are these, you know, packaged foods, and those are like easy ones to grab. But, you know, it can also be pretty easy to grab a whole food, grab, you know, an apple. Getting back to those simple foods, I think, is actually the best and ultimately easiest choice. It's, I think, that we're so bombarded by the packaging and what is convenient at, you know, like the grocery store, that that kind of muddies the water a little bit and, you know, makes us kind of forget to go back to some of those really easy snacks that don't have to be, you know, so complicated.
And I saw somebody on Instagram, the beauty of social media, there was a dad that was posting, he said, reality versus Instagram, right? And he's like, all the packaging that has like the Frozen or like all the characters that kids are attracted to. And he just slapped on stickers on like bananas and apples and things and saw what his kids were picking. And I thought that was genius. I was like, it's true. It's like, what is the kid going to go for? Because it has a character that they are attracted to. And and you saw the kid just go for an apple because it had like an Elsa sticker. And
oh my God, whatever works.
That is genius.
Right? I mean, that's the thing, but it's like we're really having to think about these things and like color code and label and the nutrition facts. we're going from physical to psychological now, where we're reading these things as far as the facts, and now we're psyching ourselves out of maybe getting that thing because of what it says and the labels. Do you think it's been a net positive thing? And how long has it really been around putting these serving sizes and, you know, nutrition facts on the back?
It hasn't been around for too long. There's been places like New York State that have put calories on menus for now quite a few years. But I think there's definitely been an epidemic, right? We're talking about the public health epidemic on people's health and wellness, and especially with kids who are, there's a larger proportion of kids who are obese because of the food choices and access to. But I think also having those calories in place too does put a little bit of an issue with certain people, because it's becoming making you aware of calories and grams and really counting. And our whole approach too is making sure that people have a good food relationship, and we don't want especially adults to go in there and start counting every calorie that they're getting, because that's right. Not realistic on how really nutrition works.
And I think, you know, not all calories are created equal as well. Like, you have to look at the full picture, and that, you know, if you looked at the calorie of, you know, an avocado, you might think, oh my gosh, that has a lot of calories. But when you look at the nutrients in it, it's not the same as looking at bar or the frappuccinos or something that you would see that's more processed that also has a lot of calories, but it's not coming from whole foods and it's not having the same nutrient composition as whole foods were. So I think the whole like comparison of calories can get a little bit dangerous at times.
Well, that's the thing. So people look at calories. I look at sodium, fat, right? Saturated fat, monounsaturated fats, all those things. What is important to pay attention to as a parent when you're going and shopping and making these food choices?
I would say, again, like I think Julie alluded to that, the whole composition, because I think historically we've seen a lot of like singling out of nutrients. And that doesn't work either, because our body needs all of it, but it needs everything in a specific amount. And so it's tricky because we want to say it's a balanced diet, but what is a balanced diet, right? How do we get exactly the amount of like macronutrients, micronutrients, vitamins and minerals? So, and there's different ways of teaching. And I think with kids, we've approached, you know, eating the rainbow, eating a certain color of fruit or vegetable. And that's just the beginning parts of how we should be eating. But I don't necessarily think singling out nutrients has ever really worked for anybody.
So, Sarah, you mentioned macronutrients and micronutrients. Can you break down what that is?
So our macronutrients are essentially our protein, carbs, and fats. They're the main fuel that our body needs. And there's so many ways to go about it, because there's people like there's exercise science that talks about how to maximize protein for like, you know, physical exercise. But those are essentially what your body needs to be fueled, what your brain needs to function every day. And then you need your micronutrients, which are essentially the supporting characters to really make sure that those macronutrients are fueling your body properly. And the rest, vitamins, minerals, and phytochemicals act combined with all of that to make sure that all the cells and essentially all the supporting characters in your body are functioning and they're staying healthy so that you can do your everyday life. And that's the simplicity of nutrition. It really is broken down to three food groups that you should be eating every day. But it becomes essentially challenging when you're supposed to get, again, a percentage of each, but you over consume one because there is a marketing or there is more something readily available. And that's, I think, where it gets complicated, because it's not just like the marketing and it's also access. You know, we have places where people don't have access to those healthy nutrients or fruits and vegetables readily available. And that's part of the public health concern that we have. And how do we feed not just ourselves, but our kids, our families? And that turns into like, how do people perform in school and then so on, go on to have jobs and careers?
Mm-hmm. Why is good fresh food so expensive, so not accessible?
That's where it's a little bit of backwards here, because food that is fresh and produce that comes from like your local neighborhoods or your farmers, producers, essentially should be more accessible. But you're right, it's more expensive. And it's because it's become harder to produce. There's a lot of challenges in the production system too. Like, there's a lot less farmers in the areas. There are obviously benefits on the quality and eating in season, eating local, eating fresh products. But yeah, there's a very limited amount. And so there's a high demand, so there's a high price, where if you are able to mass produce something, there's going to be more availability. So it's going to be cheaper. There's going to be more access to people. And that doesn't mean, like, you know, there's plenty of frozen and canned vegetables and fruits and stuff that are good and a better option for a lot of people. I think it's a really educating everybody on how to utilize those fruits and vegetables. And when you go to the grocery store, or when you, how do you make that decision to select that, cook it, and then be able to prepare it so that you enjoy it, you and your family can enjoy that.
Temperature matters. I think you were kind of alluding to that when we had talked before this conversation.
It does. And I think, you know, if you look at my educational background, I have both a master's in nutrition and a culinary degree. I have 4 degrees, actually. That's a lot. I've got an MBA, a hospitality degree. So I can look at the food system from different angles. But yeah, one of the reasons I get asked, like, why did I go to culinary school? I did an 8-month program. There was an accelerated program. And it was in between, you know, undergrad and grad school. And it was because I really wanted to understand the cooking side of food. You know, I've enjoyed baking, pastry, the normal side, but I've always been very scared. Like, I wasn't introduced, like most people, to really cook in the kitchen. I don't have, like, a grandma story.
You gotta have a grandma story. Come on.
But, like,
I'm
know,
sorry.
Like, I did, like, bake with my grandmother, you know, but right. I didn't have that passion. I loved food, but I was always intimidated, like going up to the grocery store and like looking at all these different things and not knowing what to do. And I said, well, if I'm going to be talking about food and recommending, and especially to children,
sure,
I want to know what to do. And I think one of the cool things that I really learned there was understanding like the different ways to cook vegetables, the different ways to prepare them, how you're supposed to cook something to a certain temperature, like you said, and then not leaving them or chilling them immediately so that you have them at a perfect like texture. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you master, and that, you know, that's what chefs know how to do well. And how can I essentially acquire that chef skill, but not have to create like a great composed plate, like for a restaurant, mm-hmm, but for a child who needs something simple? How can I make broccoli taste sweet and have the right texture? Because, and that's what kids want, you know, kids are developing, sure, their palate, and they're very in tune to how that tastes, how that feels, how that, you know, if it's too sweet, is it too hot, is it too cold? And I think that's it's an interesting, yeah, side to know.
Oh my God, spicy. Anything that tastes not just bland straight is always spicy. Kids, I don't know if you're a kid.
Oh, yeah.
This is spicy. It's like, oh, do you mean hot? Like temperature wise? Everything is, that's like the go-to description is spicy.
Yes. Yes. So true.
So that's one more thing to think about now. Mm-hmm. Not only finding the right things and things that are healthy, but the right temperature. But I can't imagine chefs in restaurants are thinking about how to maximize the nutrition value of this food. They're going for taste, don't you think, for the most part?
Absolutely. They're okay. They're going, you know, there might be some chefs out there, and I know, you know, my husband's a chef, and we do source, and how our ethos of our restaurant is a little bit different, and the product, the sustainability and stuff. But nutrition is not the first thing that we're thinking of when you're doing in a restaurant. Hmm. But in our household with our kids, that is the first thing we're thinking about.
Sure.
We're thinking about how are we going to get them to eat their vegetables today, and each kid is so different. There are kids that are great eaters, and there's kids that are very challenging. They're very picky, mm-hmm, and it's nothing wrong that moms and parents do. Like, you know, everybody does their best to introduce foods, and a kid might just not develop a palate for it. And so that's, mm-hmm, we all know the frustrations at the table.
Right. Or they have it and lose it.
Yeah, exactly. They go through different phases where, you know, they may not love to eat the things they used to, and that can feel really defeating as a parent or feel like you've done something wrong. But ultimately, that is just how kids eat and how, mm-hmm, we all eat. We all, you know, our palates transform and change throughout our lives too. But it is certainly frustrating when you're a parent and on the other side of that to want to feed your kids the best thing, want to make sure that they're getting the nutrients they need, knowing that there are these times where they're not maybe going to be eating the things that you're cooking, and trying to navigate that and feel,
right,
supported.
Because I always feel as a parent, it's a power thing. It's kind of, they have control. We have control over our bodies. I can say no to what you put forward, never mind all the time that has gone into creating it and expense into putting a meal together on the table. But it's like, now we're getting into like child psychology. I could sit here all day and try to figure this out. But I feel like it's a power move. I feel like it's like, nah, no. just so we have to then cater and then, okay, well, what will it take?
Or they'll, you know, it's eat certain things at different people's houses or in school that they wouldn't eat with you. And so that does feel like a power move, you know, like,
totally. Oh.
That's the challenging part with kids, because could it be that they prefer the frozen meatballs over that? What is it? Is it a texture? Is it the sugar in it? Or is it that they just really like grandma's cooking? Or maybe they just want to please grandma more? Or or again, we say, like, sometimes it's a power move, sometimes it's not. And I'm always amazed at my child who, like, won't finish dinner and then it's like, but I need a snack. But I'm really full.
But
I'm really full.
Right. Go figure.
Right. But you want, you have enough room for your snack and another snack, but you're still very full for your dinner.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. When you guys going through your credentialing, is that any of that psychology part of the what they talk about? Like, why is that? He's full, but yet he wants a snack.
We don't get, like, a lot of the child psychology part of it. And I think that's a part of what we're going to try to eventually have some other input, like professional input from other fields, which is cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, kids do want power. And one of the things I work, at least with a lot of the patients that I see as they're growing up, is how can we empower them to make small decisions, right? To start, like, depending on the age, if they're 2 and 3, like, get them to wash their vegetables, get them to be able to start learning how to cut something, get them, like, a plastic, like, little knife. And they can start that early. You know, I taught my daughter somewhere around, like, 2.5, 3 years old, she was, like, starting to cut her own things. By 4, she was already, like, making her own breakfast. And that's empowering, because she feels like she has control of that food, and she knows that she can pour her own cup of Cheerios and cut up some fruit. And that starts really teaching them about food the more involved they are. Sometimes I feel like as parents, because we want to be healthy, make sure they get the right nutrients, we control more and don't let them make that mistake. But it's a balance. It's hard. It's really hard to get a child that refuses to eat something to really be accepting of it.
You know, thinking it's their idea and getting them on board is always, you know, helpful with any other developmental milestone, you know, whether it's putting on their clothes, putting on their shoes, like anything that they're able to do themselves, like that does feel empowering, you know, motivating for them. So I think it's no different in the kitchen, like, you know, trying to help them be involved in picking what it is that we're going to have for dinner, or, you know, choosing some of those items, I think also helps their interest level. Obviously, there's a balance in making sure that what we're serving fit the bill and, you know, is actually appropriate to be eating at mealtimes. But, you know, offering them choices again that are within your family's recommendations, then they can feel like they're on board and feel like part of the family.
And, you know, kids are social too. And this is a funny story, but Julie and I hang out a lot outside and our kids get together. And we had a night where we made little pizzas. It was nothing big. It was, we literally got some pita bread, put some sauce, like it was store-bought sauce and cheese. And we had, like, our kids make it. And I always try to, like, say, okay, we're going to have pizza. We're going to put broccoli in it. And my son was like, there's no way, like, no broccoli, no. But then we did it with, like, with Julie's kids. My kids were together, and there was something about it that my son, who's 2, like, was observing her kids eat. And so he, like, mentions it all the time. He's like, you know, I had broccoli pizza with like, Madison, you know, like,
it's a much more fun experience when others are doing it. You know, you want to join in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you mean, like, just pouring a bunch of Velveeta over the broccoli? That's what I grew up watching and saying. That was how you got your kid to eat broccoli, is you just pour a bunch of Velveeta cheese over it. Oh, my God. That hasn't aged so much, I don't think, in today. But that was, like, one way, or sneaking things in to just get some nutrients in them, right? Even though outright they would reject it if you give them the broccoli cut up. With the plant-based diets, is this kind of a fad now? We see this more now playing out, everything from, like, Beyond Burgers to plant-based milks and those kinds of things. Is that a newer thing? And are you missing any, are there any deficiencies in the nutrients that you're getting? It doesn't sound like you're getting proteins, or it depends if you get the beans and other things that would be more protein-rich.
Well, there's 2 ways, right? A plant-based diet is definitely a wellness approach, but there's also a sustainability approach to it. There's people that do it because of, like, the earth and planet and what it does to like eat animal product all the time. So there's a push for more of a plant-based diet for that reason too. And of course, there's also a push because we want people to eat more wholesome nutrients. And there can be, I mean, there's a lot of plenty of protein that can come from like rice and beans and other like legumes and pulses. I just don't think we explore those a lot here. You know, you go overseas into other countries and their diets are mainly composed of those things. And we can look at Mediterranean diets and Middle Eastern diets and just overall ethnic diets are very differently composed and people are healthy. It's a way to be able to get people to try other products and not have the typical American diet. It's a little bit of both.
I do think it goes back again to variety. And I know this sometimes sounds like a cop-out, but the moderation is
everything
pretty
moderation,
key
right.
in nutrition and in life, really. Because there isn't necessarily like a end-all be-all food that you should be eating all the time. Even if it's, you know, super high in many nutrients, it's not going to fit the bill for all of them. So trying to have a well-rounded, you know, eating approach. And that's generally the best relationship with food too. Again, back to that piece that that's not only about the food, but if we're having the exact same thing every day, that doesn't do a whole lot for our relationship with food or the togetherness that that can bring with other people and mealtime, you know, checking all those boxes, not just having the same set foods over and over again.
And that's the thing. I think like at the end, the message is like, there is no trick, there is no key, there is no like specific guideline for nutrition. It's like the guideline is boring. It's like eat good food, eat wholesome ingredients, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when we're talking about balance, we're saying like eat the cookie. Like if you are craving a cookie, eat mm-hmm. like you want a chocolate, a snack, there is room for all of it. Because what happens is like when you restrict, then you're going to overeat at some point.
Interesting, right? You overcompensate.
You overcompensate mm-hmm. and like you could have just had the cookie, enjoyed it, and be done with it. But a lot of the times, like, because of the diet mentality that so many people have, it's you don't eat the cookie, and then you eat, like, a rice cake, and that's not a substitution. And then you're still hungry, and you're going to go eat and eat something else, and you're going to end up overeating because you wanted to restrict to one cookie. Mm-hmm. And so it's teaching people how to really overcome that mental battle, which is a lot easier said than done, on how to really balance and say, okay, I'm going to have a salad with a little bit of this and that, and I can have my dessert. And it's really being able to enjoy all foods, like Julie said. It's really being able to see the whole picture mm-hmm. when it comes to diet.
Yeah. When you meet with a client and you're working up a plan, I mean, where do you start in the whole workup with a client as far as a diet and a nutrition plan for them?
First and foremost, meeting them where they're at, you know, understanding what goals they are hoping to achieve and where they're finding those challenges really are primarily occurring. And then working with them on sustainable goals, right? So you're not going from, if it is a family, you know, who maybe eats out frequently, they are having more of those convenience foods, the chips, the sodas, the hamburgers. You know, it's not going a full 360 to plant-based diet. You know, that would be very jarring. So meeting them where they're at, incorporating small, achievable wins. And again, getting, you know, both the client and if there are, you know, family members on board, the whole family approach, I think, is always the most helpful because if you're doing it, it's obviously most helpful to have that support system, others around you doing the similar work so that you can all be able to achieve.
Together, kind of.
Yeah, thing. Or figuring out, yeah, how the mealtimes can become, you know, a really a family approach, you know, and if there is a child who has a special healthcare need or, you know, a special dietary restriction, working within that framework and making sure that the child doesn't feel like singled out either, right? Mm-hmm. So finding a way that the family can come together and have mealtimes be less stressful.
Are you able to practice what you preach kind of thing? Because I totally get it if you can.
It is still stressful.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And that's exactly why we are hoping to reach a larger audience and bring in other experts so we can help other people digest, no pun intended, but some of the research and some of the, you know, recommendations that are difficult for families to really put into practice. And so trying to make it just more achievable, but at the end of the day saying, we're not perfect either. We, you know, mealtimes are not going to be perfect. And sometimes you feel frustrated. Sometimes you feel defeated. Sometimes you feel really happy. Sometimes you maybe do have a successful dinner out and the kids are well behaved and you get to enjoy a meal together and everyone ate civilly. And, you know, that feels really great. And so how can we have that happen more frequently and feel more confident and just feel like you're having fewer battles for sure. And that mealtime is just a more enjoyable experience for everyone. Because really, right, that's ultimately what meals should be about. I think sometimes we are hyper fixated on the food and kids can sense that. And I think the more we take a step back from that a little bit, the pressure is off a bit more and everyone can just enjoy a little bit.
It definitely is about that meal experience. And kids really, I mean, they don't listen. They mimic, right? They copy what you do. And so to me, like, really learning to show by doing is a big thing. You know, like, how do I eat? Like, my son copies every meal that I eat. Because so I make it an effort that I sit down with them every meal, try to sit down and eat what they're eating. Because a lot of the times we tend to focus, like we're saying, like we focus on the food. And so we try to make kid-friendly food. And I don't believe in such thing as kid-friendly food. I believe in, like, making food for the family. And then your kid needs to experience the same thing. Because why should your child eat something different than you and then look at, okay, why is mom eating that? Mm. You know, I think that brings up a lot of questions, like, why do I have to? And I think that's what might cause, in some cases, that selectiveness with kids. And so even if a child is picky, trying to really normalize it and saying, look, we're eating the same meal. We're eating together. We're going to enjoy it. And, you know, if you don't want to finish your plate, that's okay. You know, like, we're going to, it's about making, like, small goals. And we both know, I mean, Julie and I have the expertise, but we're also moms. We have two that are great eaters, two that are very picky and challenging. So we kind of see it on a day-to-day basis, what it's like to be present during those meal moments. But it definitely is, I think, really showing. And I think that's where we look at, like, all nutrition, like why it's important for adults as a family, why it's important for children, because they're always looking at what you're doing. And that was part of us coming together and deciding that we want to have a podcast and have our voices heard and our expertise. Both are essentially, like, I guess, mom intuition and pediatric expertise in nutrition, because there's not a lot of reliable sources. And with social media and with marketing and with everything that we have nowadays, access to things, there's an abundance of information, but it's a lot of misinformation too, because, mm-hmm. you know, and people are entitled to their opinions and what they're doing with their families. It's fine. But that doesn't mean that that is, you know, backed by science or backed by anything that might work for other families. And I think that can cause a lot of frustration with parents that are going through challenging moments. And, mm-hmm. and so, because we don't see that there is a lot of technology or a lot of tools right now for parents, our goal is to bring those answers. And essentially, in a comfortable setting where people can listen to us anywhere, hear our stories, hear our struggles, bringing other experts, whether it's a, you know, mental health or a psychologist or somebody in food advocacy, sustainability. We have dietitians that are experts in specific picky eating or GI issues, like any question that a mom would have or a family would have, even newborns, like breastfeeding, like that's sure. all topics that, you know, I feel we need more information on and right. that come from people that have experience in both having a child and, having the educational background too.
Mm-hmm. So March is National Nutrition Month. I knew about that because you guys told me. It didn't hit my calendar Shoot. Or my reminder on my phone. So tell me a little bit. There's a month for everything, and then there's tons of things every month. So give me a little bit of background about National Nutrition Month in March.
Sure. So yes, National Nutrition Month, there's a different theme each year. This year happens to be Beyond the Plate, which is focusing a bit more on farm to table, a little bit of the sustainability focus there. But really the goal is to get people more excited about nutrition, get nutrition to be a little bit more top of mind for people, and specifically dietitians as well. I think there are a lot of people who don't necessarily know exactly what a dietitian does, the difference maybe between a dietitian and a nutritionist, which dietitians do go through a pretty rigorous curriculum and education and are certified to become dietitians, whereas nutritionist is a broader term that, you know, doesn't necessarily encompass someone who's been formally trained in the space. So yeah, National Nutrition Month is just to highlight nutrition and the professionals who work in that space. So we're excited to be part of it and two dietitians. So it is a special month for us for that reason.
I love the theme because Beyond the Plate really, really does hone into what we want to do. It's not just about talking like the fruits and vegetables, the macronutrients. Like, yes, there's going to be lots of questions about that, but there's so much more. We want to talk about everything from like child development to, you know, moms that struggle to feed their kids to like your own personal nutrition to speech language pathologists that help with kids that have oral development functions. It can be so much more. I want to talk about sustainability and even, you know, interview some chefs that have some input into like what it's like to compose plates and how to, like, let's talk about taking families out to eat at restaurants. So there's just so much more that goes because like we talked, like it's about nourishing yourself and it's all parts of life. It's how you grow, how you function, how you spend your days with family, loved ones. So there's a lot to it.
There is.
To cover.
And I think injecting some creativity, some outside of the box thinking, beyond the plate, I think it all ties in. Ultimately, I think that is what wins, certainly with kids at this age, you know, in the younger set, whether it's a color, whether it's a name, whether it's seeing their friends or friends of friends, their kids doing it and they want to mimic it. I think that's a great point you made about mimicking because they are. They just will reflect back what you reflect to them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's an important thing that we lose sight of as parents because we just want the convenient, we want the quick. We need to go on to the next thing. So thank you guys for what you do. Thank you for bringing the message to the public. This is something that is always in need because even being a dad for 13 years now, there's still questions. So thank you guys. Really excited to hear about what is going to come from your messaging and from your podcast. Really looking forward to it.
Thank you, Rick, for having us.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thank you. I look forward to hearing what's next for you all. And I want to thank everybody for listening to The Pod of DC. I'm your host, Rick Bernstein, and we'll talk soon.
The Pod of DC is a Voice of DC production. To catch up on previous episodes and to follow and subscribe, type in The Pod of DC wherever you get your podcasts.